Daddy, I'm starting to think we should turn back.
Turn back, Becky? Whoa, we can't. We've come too far.
Oh, Professor Ballard, why did you ever insist on bringing your oh-so-fragile, high-strung waif of a daughter down here with us?
Oh, you be quiet, Joan. I can see you're trying to act brave, but we all know you're just as scared as...
Okay, all right, let's break it up, you two.
I'm not the one whining and complaining every step of this expedition.
Everyone, please, we need to stay alert.
But we're down to our last torch.
That's because you were careless and caused Dawn to drop the bag carrying all of our supplies down a bottomless passage. Fool.
Well, that wasn't my fault.
Oh, it wasn't? Whose fault was it then?
Pathetic.
All right, I said that's enough of that.
Please, we all need to work together as a team. Picking one another apart is not going to accomplish anything. After all, this could be the greatest find of my entire career.
We're in for it now. Are you happy now, Becky?
Joan, please. You're not helping right now.
What are we going to do, Professor? We're completely in the dark of this cave now. Be careful, everyone. Any step could be our last.
Gabon? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, that's the first word I've heard come out of this fellow's mouth all day.
Don, please. Gabon is our guide. He's brought us this far, and he's...
Only he can get us back? Oh, please tell me that's not...
There are two choices. We can go forward, or I can lead you back.
Well, there's only one choice, then.
Becky, my dear, we can't turn back now. There has to be a way that we can...
There is a way forward.
As much as I'd like to press forward, there's still two things that trouble me. One, we no longer have a source of light. And two, Gabon here is blind.
Yes, Gabon is blind, Joan, but he knows his way around these caverns better than anyone.
What is the choice, then? Shall we move forward, or shall we go back?
Well, maybe Gabon can do anything he likes in total darkness, but we can't.
How are we going to find it if we can't even see it?
If you trust me and move forward, I will take you to the Palace of the Glowing Rocks.
Glowing Rocks?
Ah, he must mean the phosphorescent formations. How far are we from the glowing rocks, Gabon?
Not far at all. And beyond that, there is a great crevice where the sunlight may enter.
Then I think that settles it.
Settles it? Daddy, I'm afraid.
Ah, Becky, my darling. Daddy needs you to gather your courage. For the sake of mankind. For science.
Becky, he's right. Your father is the world's premier chiroptologist. Just think of the kinds of grants we could all benefit from if we were able to bring back even one specimen.
Grants that would enable us to go further with our work than ever before and decode the very secrets that nature have been concealing from all of humanity. No, I will not let you prevent this expedition from going
anywhere. No, okay, Joan. The rationale has been well established. Gabon, let us press forward.
As you wish. Let us form a chain. You, Professor, take my hand.
Yeah, got it. Becky, where are you?
I'm here, Daddy.
Take my hand. Now give her your hand too, Dawn.
I've already found her. Such soft hands, Becky. Now, Joan, give me your hand. Joan! Give me your hand, Joan!
Nothing else we can do. We must go forward or perish. Very good, everyone. Lightly, one step at a time.
How much longer can we keep going on? I don't think my nerves can take much more of this.
We have to be strong, Dawn.
Daddy.
Hold on, dear, hold on. We'll get through this. You just wait and see.
Oh.
What is it, Becky?
You don't smell it? That terrible odor.
Well, that could only be the Chiropody Day, of the order Chiroptera.
What?
More commonly known as the fruit bat.
Doesn't smell like fruit to me.
They are the spirits, the guardians of this place.
Look, the rocks.
Wow, would you look at that? Astonishing.
Here we are, the palace of the glowing rocks.
It's like nothing I've ever seen.
Oh my, that's so beautiful, yet so eerie. Words can't begin to describe. Oh!
Please, you must not raise your voice here.
Look what she's looking at, Professor.
Those have to be the largest specimens I have ever seen. They all seem to be sleeping. Oh, I dare not disturb them now.
You are wise, Professor. Very wise.
Professor, that's not what Becky was pointing at.
What's that?
Look again.
Skeletons.
Human skeletons, Professor.
Please. You must be quiet here.
It's all right, Becky.
So what happens now, Gabon?
We remain here.
For how long?
Until it is time.
Time? Time for what?
Do not worry. It will not be long. In fact... I told you, please do not be so loud. Our ears are very sensitive.
Our ears?
What do you mean by that?
Oh, Daddy!
Gabon! What's happening to Gabon?
Gabon is changing into...
Gabon to take the crew under his wing. Those folks were brave, venturing down into that cave.
I'd say they all deserve a big bat on the back.
Oh, what's that, Obsidian, my furry fiend? There is no more sand in the hourglass. Time for us to go, eh? But before we leave, what tale shall we reveal to our listeners next week, my sinister sisters?
For an ambitious young up-and-comer, where there's a kill, there's always a way. In our next turgid tale, an entree to murder.
Join me and my sisters next time as we take the trouble to bubble up the cauldron with another tale to chill your bones here at
the Cavern of the Three Crows!
The Cavern of the Three Crones is written and produced by Lawrence P. Woodsburg. In tonight's cast, you heard Kitty Culpine, Arthur Raymond, Buddy Diller, Phyllis Larson, Dolores Clay, and Paul Diamond. This is Ted Fortescue speaking.
This is your late-night announcer, Rex Arnold, coming to you live from radio station WXRQ Fort Ryan. I hope you enjoyed our rebroadcast of the classic series, The Cavern of the Three Crones. Perfect for these late-night hours, wouldn't you say? The terrifying episode you just heard is titled Down in the Caves, and was one of the most popular and most requested entries from the series. Up next... we have an hour of enchanting songs and memories, courtesy of Barry Gesser and his famous Floridians. But first, these words. Frank! Frank! Frank, where the hell are you? I turned my back for a minute, damn it! Frank! Frank!
Hey, calm down, Rexy boy.
Frank, why aren't you in the booth?
I said relax, chum.
Where were you just now?
I just slipped out for a moment while you were dozing off during that Cavern of the Three Crones nonsense.
I was not dozing off.
Yes, you were. Luckily, you're not a snorer.
My eyes were closed, that's all.
Rexy, old chum, you look kind of wound up. What's the matter?
Why'd you just walk out of here like that? Huh, Frank? The engineer needs to be in the booth at all times. What if?
What exactly is going to happen during this shift? I'll tell you what. Nada. It's just you and me, partner.
Right. Yes. But still, you shouldn't just leave the studio like this.
Look, I understand. This is a very lonely place at night.
It's not that. It's just...
It's okay to admit it, Rex. This is just a lonely place and a lonesome job. You'll get used to it.
Well, I guess you could say I don't like to be alone. Not for too long, I guess.
Well, that's not uncommon for a lot of people.
Frank, when did you stop feeling lonely? Working this shift, I mean.
I haven't. Yeah, I just got used to it.
I've been on radio for a very long time, you know. I've just never had a job quite like this before.
Just be glad to have a job, I suppose.
Frank, where the heck did you run off to? I mean, really, nothing's open at this wretched hour.
I just went to my car, Rex, to refill my canteen.
Canteen?
Here, be a good boy scout. Have a sip. Go on.
Sorry, Frank. I'll have to pass. The old me would have joined you in a heartbeat. I had to give up the booze. Nearly did me in.
What do you know? I learn something new about you every day, Rexy. Sure you don't want some?
No.
You know, Rex, I've been twiddling the knobs here on the late shift at WXRQ for 6 years. I've seen a dozen announcers come and go. Very few of them can hack it for long around here. The odd hours, the tedium, the loneliness. You either learn to cope with it like me, or you just...
Frank, darling, did you bring that damn bottle?
Georgette?
Oh, yes. Rexy, old boy. I'd heard you just started working here.
Georgette!
Let me welcome you to the WXRQ family.
Georgette, what are you doing here at this hour?
Her morning show starts in a few hours. She just kills some time with me beforehand sometimes. Isn't that right, Georgette?
Pass that flask over, Frank.
Here you go. You two know each other, Rex?
Hey, lover. Light this up for me.
Sure.
It might be hard to recall, but there was a time everybody in this racket knew who Rex Arnold was.
And who exactly was I, Georgette?
Not all that different from the smoke coming from my lips.
The tiny radio station that houses the studio of WXRQ is an amplitude-modulated, or AM, radio station carrier whose frequencies are roughly in the range of 535 to 1605 kilohertz. It's one of hundreds of little stations sprinkled around the country that broadcasts late into the evening hours, sharing the remnants of a time that is gradually fading from memory. Where lonely people transmit their lonesome signals to other lonely people. A nation singularly united by aloneness. Inside the radio station of WXRQ, it's just the beginning of yet another endless shift.
What a bust that turned out to be.
Oh, who cares? We got our kicks plenty.
Kicks?
Light me up like a good dope, won't you, baby?
Sure. I took Georgette to the fights before coming to the station tonight.
The fights?
Yeah, the fights.
I lost a bundle on Kid Flipper.
Kid Flipper? You mean Kid Flopper?
Oh, boy. <Woo.
laughs> Why would you ever put money on such a beanbag?
How was I supposed to know he had an Achilles face?
That was your money, kid. Like I said, we got our kicks. Speaking of, where is that bottle at? I may not be punch drunk, but I'd sure as hell like to be drunk on the punch. You get what I mean?
Give me a second. I'll get it.
Still the same, Georgette. Still enjoying those dual lives of yours?
Well, you can't be that numb, Rex. A cat like me has a lot more than two lives.
Still married?
What do you think?
That never got in the way of you having a good time.
Very astute, Rexy, old man. Yeah, I'm still hitched to that old bag of golf clubs. He plays his games and he lets me play mine. Same club, different courses. You get what I mean?
And in what sand trap did you find the latest sap?
I'm sorry, which sap are you referring to? There are so many.
I'm back, and looky here. Voila! The good stuff!
Oh, isn't he the cutest? He thinks this is the good stuff. How adorable.
Nuts to you. More from me, then.
Frank, you realize I'm back on the air in 3 minutes.
Rex, my internal clock never fails me. Or you. Remember that.
Just pointing it out.
I'm a professional, all right?
Professional what?
Don't mind him, Frank. Rexy here has had a long career in broadcasting.
Is that right?
He was one of the busiest character actors on the radio. But that was a long time ago, wasn't it, Rexy?
So it was.
Everybody wanted to hire Rex Arnold, the man with the golden voice. A great voice, for sure, but too average-looking to be in the pictures. You see, the camera loves some more than it loves others, and in Rex's case, the lens only made him appear smaller. And that simply won't do in Hollywood. Well, television is the thing nowadays, and people don't listen to the radio to hear what the shadow knows or any of that stuff anymore. Those days are gone. But that golden voice still needs somewhere to go. Some lonely audience to talk to, doesn't it? Hopefully that audience won't die off before you do.
2 minutes to airtime, Frank.
Oh, don't take it so personal, honey. You see, Rex is an old colleague of mine. He and I come from the same world. Hey, do you think I'm thrilled to be slapping on a happy face over my scowl at 7 a.m. for a bunch of flat-headed yokels? I used to be coast to coast, baby. Now I'm just coasting.
I'm going to the booth. You gonna join me or what, Georgette?
In my own good time. Maybe I'd like to watch an old master at work for a moment. It's not often you get to see the great Rex Arnold of radio introduce a repeat of a low-budget horror show.
Why don't you just leave me alone?
You know, when we were at the fights tonight, Frank and I were sitting ringside, close enough so that when Kid Flipper ate a right cross, the blood sprayed all over us. A little bit got in my mouth. I didn't mind it at all.
And we're live.
Good evening, Rex Arnold speaking. Yes, folks, it's now that hour of the night where there is no sense of time, which means anything can happen. Hopefully you're listening from somewhere comfortable. If you are, turn the lights down low, for we are about to enter the Cavern of the Three Crones, a delightfully chilling romp from the golden age of radio broadcasting. It's hard to believe, but this episode originally aired 20 years ago on March 15th, 1939.
Take the trouble
to toil and babble.
We can feel you quiver in your bones.
Down here in the cavern of the Three Crones.
Yes, friends, it's time once again to enter the bizarre world of the Cavern of the Three Crones. Three satanic storytelling sisters, along with their feline minion Obsidian, invite you into a realm of mystery, murder, and the supernatural.
Oh, what's that, Obsidian? What story shall we tell? It appears before us now in the poisoned broth of the cauldron.
Stir it well.
It emerges now. Can you make out the title, my sisters? Mine eyes are not as sharp as yours.
Ah, yes. An entree to murder.
But wait! Do you think this one might be too horrible to tell?
If ye be weak of heart, turn away now! They still be here, eh? Well, we warned ye.
May I have this dance?
And who are you?
My name is Michael Jones.
Mr. Jones.
Won't you have this dance with me?
I don't think you're a member of this club. I certainly don't recall any Michael Jones on the roster.
Well, I'm not, but I hope to be someday.
How did you find your way in here, then?
Let's just say I'm an ambitious sort of fellow. I kind of talked my way in here, if you get my meaning.
Well, I appreciate your honesty, Mr. Jones, but the chances of us interacting beyond this point are not.
I know they're not. I know. But I am a very driven man. I've come a long way. I started life with nothing, and little by little I'm making a name for myself. I'll do anything to get what I want.
And what is it you want?
This next dance, of course.
People will talk.
Let them.
I can't chance that. I'm sorry.
You are the most beautiful woman I have ever seen and will ever see. Come with me. If you don't take this chance now,
you
we may never...
You are charming, Mr. Jones. I like your fire, your spirit, your intense black eyes.
What must I do? I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Catherine. Catherine Beaumont.
Catherine. Just one dance, please.
Perhaps in another time. In another place.
There is no other time. There is no other place.
Restraint. Restraint, Mr. Jones, is the mark of good breeding. Please, I'm afraid that I am unable to satisfy your request. Good evening.
Very well.
Well, you stepped up to the plate and gave it your best swing, eh? No one can fault you for trying, my boy.
Who are you?
Me? Oh, I'm Harrison J. Blair. You know, of the Foxton Blairs.
I'm Michael Jones of the Lower East Side Palookaville Joneses. Maybe you've heard of us.
Oh, you are quite the wit. And you are a very good-looking fellow. But as you just learned now, there are certain barriers determined by class, prestige, birthright, and most important of all, ambition.
Well, out of all of those, I do have ambition. You know, Mr. Blair, I started my own label-making business with a $50 loan from the bank 4 years ago, and I've done pretty well for myself. But not well enough, I see.
Oh, yes, indeed. Money is not enough. You need to enter society.
If I was in society, I'd be able to dance with Catherine Beaumont.
Oh, yes, you would, many times over.
Tell me the truth, Mr. Blair. That'll never happen to me.
Well, I wouldn't say that's necessarily so.
What do you mean?
Look, there are some men here, men you can see waltzing around with their pretty partners that were able to enter society, but not in the traditional way.
Tell me, how?
They were willing to do whatever it took to succeed.
That's me too. I'm willing to do whatever it takes.
Are you?
Yes. What do these men have that I don't?
Who says that you don't? Well, I didn't.
Then how can I enter into society like them?
Did you know, Mr. Jones, of all the men of power and prestige that walk among us in this room, very few got where they are today without committing some sort of unforgivable sin.
Can that really be so?
Oh, it is. Let that sink in for a moment. Some of them were men just like you, men who came from penniless families with scant education, but they found their way into society.
How?
They were willing to do whatever it takes. Pay any price.
I already told you, I'm willing to do whatever it takes.
Oh, that's just hyperbole, my boy. It's easy to say such a thing. It's another thing to really mean it.
I'm deadly serious.
Deadly serious? Oh, my.
I swear to you, I will do whatever it takes to be top dog.
You mean what you say, then?
I do.
Oh, it's quite easy to bypass all the rigmarole needed to enter society in the traditional way if you have the courage, the absolute guts.
I fear nothing. I'll take any chance.
Oh, my boy. I believe you. There is a way for you to enter society, a way to skip the line, if you will. As anyone who has made anything of themselves knows, our world is a system of reciprocal behavior.
Favors?
Yes, yes. You are sharp, my lad. I like you. I like you very much. Tell you what, I'm going to share something with you, but only if you truly are deadly serious.
I am.
Good. Here, take this note. I want you to submit a formal request to a Mr. Good, the founder and chair of the Palomir Club. He can help you manage everything required to enable you to enter society.
That's it? Just write him a letter?
No, that's it. Drop him a line and ask him if there's anything you can do for him. He will reply to you with a request. Fulfill his request, and he will perform a favor for you in return. if you get my meaning.
You're not serious.
Prepare yourself. Mr. Good's order will be a tall one, a very tall order indeed. But if you are serious and man enough to seize the bounty...
I am man enough.
Drop Mr. Good a note then. Oh, and one other thing?
Yes?
Read the information in his reply as soon as possible. You see, the ink will soon disappear from the page the moment you open the envelope. I hope you took careful note of everything I just said, as I will not repeat it again. Good day, Mr. Jones. Good luck.
Ah, now, the brash, ambitious, and headstrong Mr. Jones didn't waste any time at all to write that little note to Mr. Good of the Palomere Club. And it is on the very next day.
He received his reply.
Well, that was fast. What does it say here? Oh, my. This can't be. This has to be a joke. Mr. Good would like me to what? Let me read this again. I can't believe what my eyes are seeing. Oh, my. Holy, the ink, it's fading. Can it be? No, I can't believe it. Mr. Good wants me to commit a murder.
Yes, murder, murder, murder. Mr. Jones is strong-willed,
but also weak in his thirst for power.
But he wouldn't act on this impulse, would he? Oh, no, not our Mr. Jones.
Would he?
Could he?
Oh, look here. You almost knocked me over.
I'm sorry. Hey, Catherine.
Mr. Jones, is it? You ought to be more careful. I nearly fell out into the street just now. I could have been run over.
You remembered. You remembered my name.
I suppose you are a memorable type of person. Your handsome looks don't fail you, I will say that much.
Catherine. Catherine Beaumont.
Yes. What is it, Mr. Jones?
I'm so glad I happened to run into you. It must be a sign.
A sign? A sign of what?
Miss Beaumont, what if I told you I was going to enter society? I mean really enter society. Appear in the book of who's who.
I'd say that would be quite an accomplishment. But nothing short of a miracle, I'm afraid.
Well, you just wait and see. Yes, yes.
Just what are you up to, Mr. Jones?
Mark my words, Miss Beaumont. A week from now, you will not feel the slightest hesitation taking my arm at the next dance.
If you say so, Mr. Jones.
Wear your prettiest gown, Miss Beaumont. I'll be there as a new man.
That's all it took. One look into the doe eyes of that beautiful socialite.
Funny how love makes a fella do things.
It gave Mr. Jones all the confidence he needed to make his final decision.
Now, all there was left to do was the deed itself.
The final act.
The price of entry, which was...
Murder!
And the victim,
thank you, Clyde. You can just leave me here. I know it's dark, but I'd like to stay here on the veranda and look at the stars for a while longer. Go on. Take the rest of the evening off. You deserve it. Go on. Thank you, Clyde. Oh, what a beautiful night. I can't take nights like these for granted anymore. No, sir. I can
see every star in the sky. There's Polaris. That's easy to spot. But there's Regal. Over there I see Canopus and Sirius and... Hey! What was that? Who's there? Is that you, Clyde? 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 Please tell me that's you, Clyde? Please? Who are you? What do you want? How did you get in here? How did you... Jones made his play. His assigned victim?
A wealthy widow, Mrs. Victoria Peel.
A nearly perfect crime.
Executed with nothing more than a pair of gloves. A piece of piano wire.
And the will, the desire, the lust to commit murder!
If only it was that simple.
There was a witness.
Clyde, the butler. He saw a man skulking from the house, and the description matched.
So, Mr. Jones was apprehended.
Was tried.
And convicted
of murder.
The trial was swift.
As was the sentencing.
And our poor Mr. Jones swung from the gallows not 2 days after Christmas that year.
But the story doesn't end there, my pets.
Dun 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 dun. Do-do-do-do-do. Oh, good news, Catherine.
What's that, Uncle Harrison?
I just spoke with the attorney.
The probate attorney?
Yes, yes, Mr. Sachs, our probate attorney.
And what did he say?
We're in the money. We're in the money.
I still can't believe you got away with it.
Can't believe I got away with it? You mean we?
You had that pathetic rube of a man, Mr. Jones, do away with poor Aunt Victoria.
I can see that it weighs heavily on your conscience, my dear niece. But the way I see it, we did nothing wrong. There's no dirt on our hands, you see. People like us don't do such things.
Oh, he didn't appear to be so foolish, that Mr. Jones. He really believed that by writing a letter to a stranger, that he could enter society?
The man was not what I would call stupid, just desperate. Sometimes even the most intelligent of people will forget their best senses in the name of desire and narcissism, which is why he was a godsend. Fate placed him squarely in our laps.
It still doesn't sit well with me, Uncle Harrison.
Oh, what doesn't sit well with you? Oh, no longer having to pretend that you're not as rich as you'd have others believe? Or that our formerly depleted coffers have been gloriously refilled thanks to my sister Victoria's passing? Oh, I do say, my dear, you are quite impossible to please.
I don't know. I feel...
Catherine... You mustn't make me worry about you.
I...
Only you and I know. Let's keep it that way. Are you expecting anyone?
No.
You said that we'd be alone.
I said I'm not expecting anyone.
Shall I answer it?
Go on.
Yes? How can I help you?
Good evening. May I come in?
I'm sorry. Who are you?
My name is Good.
What's that?
I'm Mr. Good, the founder and chair of the Palomir Club.
That can't be.
I'll just see myself in, if you don't mind. Thank you.
What is all this? Who are you, really, and what are you getting at?
I believe I already told you. You know very well who I am, old sport. Let's not play these games, shall we?
Mr. Good?
Of the Palomar Club? But that can't be.
Who is this man?
Miss Catherine Beaumont, I presume. Ah, just my good fortune to meet both you and Mr. Harrison Blair here at the same time. It will save me a trip.
Who are you? Who sent you?
I don't understand what's going on.
When a person, any person, contacts me, I reply with a request. If that request is fulfilled, I return the favor to the very best of my ability. No questions asked. One Mr. Michael Jones sent me a note. He gave your name as a reference, Mr. Blair.
Now, this is insane.
Now I'm here to fulfill Mr. Jones's request.
That's impossible.
And why is that?
Because you're my invention. That note Jones sent went to my private post box. I wrote that reply with disappearing ink. You're a work of fiction. I made you up.
Made me up? Oh, dear. I really don't see how that could be, Mr. Blair. So, to my order of business. Just before he went to the gallows, since he had done what I asked of him to do, to take the life of Mrs. Victoria Peat, I asked him what I could possibly do in return. Naturally, he asked if I could somehow secure his release from prison and have him exonerated. That, unfortunately, I was unable to do. But I was able to make him a conciliatory offer.
A conciliatory offer?
Yes. To mete out justice. As slowly and as painfully as possible. Where the two of you are concerned, of course.
Wait.
Justice? What is going on?
Well, I simply revealed to Mr. Jones that Mr. Harrison Blair happens to be your uncle, and that Mrs. Victoria Peat is your wealthy relative, and he was able to piece together the rest without much assistance from me. So, Mr. Jones asked me to perform a favor in return, one that I could easily and happily fulfill.
Wait!
Very well, then. Now that we won't be disturbed, shall we begin?
Oh, for such a tidy-looking man, he leaves quite a mess, doesn't he?
They don't call him Mr. Good for nothing.
Good for nothing. Get it?
Obsidian, my furry fiend. There's no more sand in the hourglass. Time for us to go away.
But before we leave, what tale shall we reveal to our listeners next week, my sinister sister?
Find out what happens when magic turns tragic in our next yelping yarn. Now you see her, now you don't.
Join me and my sisters next time as we take the trouble to bubble up the cauldron with another tale to chill your bones here at
the Cavern of the Three Crows!
The Cavern of the Three Crones is written and produced by Lawrence P. Woodsburg. In tonight's cast, you heard Kitty Culpine, Arthur Raymond, Buddy Diller, Phyllis Larson, Dolores Clay, and Paul Diamond. This is Ted Fortescue speaking.
Now, how about that, kids? Tune in tomorrow night for another spine-tingling repeat episode of The Cavern of the Three Crones! You can only hear it here from WXRQ 823 on your radio dial. Now, how about this nice piece of soothing music?
Sleep hours.
The little studio of WXRQ. A long night, but not entirely uneventful.
Stay tuned for another gentle half hour of Moonlight Memory Melodies with swinging Sammy Sweet and his orchestra, followed by another rebroadcast of the classic spooky series, The Cavern of the Three Crones! At the sound of the tone, the time will be 11:30 p.m.
Damn it, Frank! Where the hell are you now?
Oh, cool your engines, Junior. I'll be back in a minute.
Georgette, for Christ's sake! Are you going to be here in the studio every night like this?
Maybe. As long as Frank is still able to keep me amused.
You know Frank's not the only guy in town with a trunk full of booze and pills.
Yeah, but none of those other fellows seem to offer me as much of those things gratis, comprende? And I get to camp out here before I go on the air with my morning show. Oh, I just love a short commute.
I don't approve of any of this. I just want you to know that.
What are you going to do?
You gonna run to the big bad station manager?
I never knew you to be a snitch, Rexy old boy.
Stop calling me that.
Why? Because it brings back memories? Admit it. You can't stand seeing me pawing around in the booth with Frank, can you?
I don't care. Our thing was a long time ago.
Oh, but you do care. You can't fool me. It burns you up seeing me here at the station every night. Just admit it.
You're doing this on purpose. To torture me.
You had a chance to make an honest woman out of me years ago.
And you're never going to let me forget it, are you?
Nope.
Hey, I just heated these up. Who wants one?
What are Frank? Those?
Stuffed baked potatoes. Just peel the aluminum foil off. Careful, they're hot.
You made these?
Nah, my wife did. My spoiled brat kids wouldn't eat them at dinner, so I just grabbed a handful. Have one, Rex. They taste pretty great after the third or fourth bite.
No thanks.
Rex is starchy enough as it is.
That's funny. Here, Georgette, I was able to pick up these for you. Save them for dessert, huh?
Oh, who are you kidding? These are the main course. You got anything to wash them down with?
Right here in my back pocket.
Frank, Georgette. I've been trying to hold my tongue here, but...
Oh, you don't approve. Yeah.
I know this is a difficult shift. The tedium. The long stretches of...
Rex, you can end the lecture now. Just because you used to be a juice head doesn't mean you get to poop at everyone else's cornflakes.
Okay, let's just try to all simmer down now.
Look, it'd be a lot cooler in here, Georgette, if you'd just go home and let us work in peace.
Hey, Rex, let's get one thing straight. You're the new old guy around here. I outrank you in this scenario. During this shift, what I say goes. You have no say over who comes and goes in this studio. If you don't like the way that tastes going down, brother, the door's right there.
Oh, ease up, Frank. Rexy needs this gig. There aren't many jobs left for him these days.
Then let's see him act like it. By the way, we'll be going live with that garbage, ghouly, ghosty show in 2 minutes.
It's not garbage.
It's crap. Why do you think we broadcast it overnight while no one's listening? We just use it to kill time. Plus, it costs the station next to nothing.
Even the worst radio programs from the old days are better than most of the dreck you hear today. This one we play each night, for instance. The Cavern of the Three Crones. Well, I admit it's not Ibsen or Shakespeare. It's well made and it has period charm. I used to act in a few of these shows just like it. You remember those shows, right, Georgette?
Oh, the late-night horror shows? Like Arch Obler and his Lights Out. It is
later than you think.
That was great stuff.
Dark Fantasy, The Weird Circle.
Those are all crap. The only good one is Suspense, which is still on the air in a few places, I think.
Yeah, it's not what it used to be. All those old shows are gone.
Even Jack Benny retired his radio show. He's only doing television now.
He's one of the lucky few. The rest of us, we really have nowhere else to go.
But back to our memories. Those were some good times, weren't they? And we didn't even know we had it so good. Sometimes it dawns on me out of nowhere. Those days are never coming back. Frank, you got a light. There was always work. There was always something new and exciting to do each and every day. In 1 hour, I could play a little girl in a Grimm's fairy tale. In the next, a handmaiden to the Queen of Scots. It didn't matter what you looked like. You did it all with nothing but your dexterity of voice. Work was life. Life was work. All one and the same. We made people's lives a little better. What more could you ask for than that? But now, what are we doing? What have we become? Frank, where's that flask?
Here, doll.
What do you say? Let's have ourselves a little party.
You do know how to put the broad back in broadcasting.
Oh, you say the sweetest things.
You say that to all the audio engineers with big bottles of hooch. Come on up in the booth with me and I'll show you how my gear works. I'll even let you play with some of my faders. Come on, doll.
Rexy, we're on in 10, 9, 8. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we're live.
Rex Donald here at the top of the hour. And you know what time it is, right, folks? Time for another visit down below to the Cavern of the Three Crones. Now, turn the lights down low. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this classic thrill fest. From the golden annals of yesteryear.
Three satanic storytelling sisters, along with their feline minion Obsidian, invite you into a realm of mystery, murder, and the supernatural.
Oh, what's that, Obsidian? What story shall we tell? It appears before us now, in the poisoned broth of our cauldron. Stir it well. It emerges now. Can you make out the title, my sisters? Mine eyes are not as sharp as yours. Ah, yes. It be a tale called Now You See Her, Now You Don't.
Wait! Do you think this one might be a tad too horrible to tell?
If ye be weak of heart, turn away now.
Turn away!
They still be here, eh? Well, we warned ye. We warned ye.
Maestro, please listen to me. We can't put it off any longer.
What do you mean, Mr. Avery? Tonight was a smash.
He's right, you know, Maestro.
Didn't you hear the crowds, the screams, the applause?
Do you want to tell him, Mr. Sweswick, or should I?
Tell me what? Maestro is a smash, the reigning king of magic.
The audience may have been screaming, but they just had a big bark for a small group of folks.
Box office receipts were down almost 25% last week.
And they were down 30% this week. Noticing a trend?
But that cannot be! That isn't possible!
Maestro, old chum, the numbers don't lie.
And you know as well as we do why that is.
No! No, I don't! Why don't you tell me?
Maestro, you need a new lovely assistant.
You've been working the show for the last month without an assistant. Ever since, well, Rosemary...
I know. Please, don't bring up this tragedy. But the show must go on.
Well, if it's going to go on, we'll need something with prettier legs than yours brought back into the act.
Maestro, listen to your agent.
And your manager.
We're entering a downward spiral.
We have to do something
fast.
Or
the only disappearing act...
will be your audience.
Fui! Bah! The day Maestro needs a tramp in tights and sequins, too.
We're already setting up auditions for some new gals tomorrow.
At 11 a.m.
Auditions? 11 a.m.?
We'll have a nice big pot of coffee for all of us.
But we're not leaving the theater until we find a new girl for this act. You understand?
Gentlemen, I am greatly wounded, insulted.
And quickly going broke.
Just be there bright and early tomorrow, and you better be nice to these gals. They're coming over from three different counties to audition just for you.
Well, let it be known that the great Maestro does so under protest. Good evening.
Uh-oh, I hope we
didn't... Oh, don't worry. You know Maestro's a hothead. He'll cool off soon enough. It's all for his own good.
So, they brought in all them pretty young lasses to the theater for the great audition. The prettiest gals you ever saw.
Even prettier than us!
One after the other, each one more beautiful and talented than the last. But then it came time to make a decision.
Maestro, we've seen over 100 girls, but I think we all agree who we like the best.
Maestro?
Oh, goodness.
Oh, for crying out loud. Oh, Mr. Avery, wake him up, why don't you?
What?
Wake up, Maestro. Don't you want to see your new assistant?
They are all the same. I don't care anymore.
Lucinda, will you please come center stage? We'd like to talk with you.
Yes, Mr. Sweswick.
Oh, my.
She's quite a looker, eh, Maestro?
Come forward, dear. We have some good news for you.
You do?
It's Uncanny.
What is it, Magestro?
Lucinda, we have selected you to be Magestro's lovely new assistant.
Oh, that's wonderful.
What's wrong, Magestro?
I have seen this woman before.
I'm sorry?
I have seen her before this day.
Oh, so you're previously acquainted. Great. Even better. Good to have some history, repartee, etc.
You don't understand. I have seen her before, but only in a dream. A recurring dream. It's her.
And that's what I'm saying. She's a real dream, isn't she? It's settled then. She's the one. Lucinda, you're hired. I'll be with you in just a moment to review the contract.
But it's settled,
Magestro. We'll start rehearsals first thing tomorrow. I want Lucinda up and running on the show as soon as humanly possible.
Hence began the apprenticeship of Magestro's new assistant. As it is a custom, Magestro shared all of his carefully guarded secrets with his new child.
Every trick in the book, and then some!
And when I position the saw this way, you maneuver like...
Like this?
Yes. Excellent. Very well done.
Thank you.
Now, you see how that works. That is one of my finest illusions. But once again, I must ask you to...
Yes, Magestro?
I must be able to trust you. Everything I have shown you today must remain a secret. Lucinda, why do you look at me that way?
What way, Magestro?
I feel as if you are peering into my very soul.
Is that what you think?
I feel slightly dizzy. I think I need a moment.
Are you all right, Magestro?
Maybe I just need a glass of water. Oh, that's better. Now, what was I saying?
Everything you've shown me must remain a secret.
Ah, yes. That is what I wanted to say.
I'm very good at keeping secrets, Magestro. You don't have to worry about me.
Is that so?
I know many secrets. All kinds of secrets. And they are safe with me.
My goodness. You even sound like her.
Who?
The woman I see in my dream.
Is she a good woman or a bad woman?
I don't know. She's just there, looking at me.
Well, don't worry, Magestro. All your secrets are safe with me. Not just the magical ones.
What do you mean by that?
Don't you want to show me another illusion for the act?
I suppose I should.
Don't worry. I won't reveal your illusions to anyone. Not the way Rosemary did.
What did you say?
I said I won't threaten to share your secrets like Rosemary did. Even though you stole many of your illusions from other magicians.
What?
Don't you remember? Rosemary confronted you in your dressing room that night.
I've had it, Magestro. I really had it.
How many times have I told you, Rosemary? You are never to enter my dressing room.
You really won't make me a partner in the act, huh?
Oh, leave me alone with your trifles.
I'm not just some chorus girl you can shoo away, Magestro.
Magestro has no time for you. Now leave my presence.
You seem to forget. I've worked with you for a long time. I know how every illusion works. I even helped refine some of them.
Bah!
You think I'm just some piece of fluff in stockings and feathers, huh? Something for folks to whistle and gawk at, huh?
You are an overpaid piece of fluff, if you want to know the truth, Rosemary.
Is that what you think, Magestro? Well, what would you say if I took everything I know and started an act of my own?
You don't mean that, do you?
Oh, I've never been more serious.
All right. Let's take a moment here. Why are we arguing? We're all friends, aren't we?
Oh, well, it seems we used to be friends.
I can see what you are saying. Magestro has not been a good friend. I'll tell you what.
After tonight's show, let's sit down with Mr. Avery and Mr. Sedgwick and let us see about drawing up a new contract.
With you and me as equal partners?
Yes. Equal partners. Starting tomorrow night and from now on, the show will be called Maestro the Magnificent and Rosemary.
Oh, you mean that? You really mean that?
Maestro gives you his word.
Oh, Maestro. Oh, I could give you a great big kiss.
No, please don't do that. Now, return to your dressing room. We have a big house waiting for us tonight.
Rosemary was overjoyed at the prospect of becoming your partner in the act. She felt lighter than air while she waited in her dressing room. But a fiendish idea quickly popped into your head. Before the show, when no one was looking, you went backstage and tampered with the pulleys that held the levitation box, held many feet high above the stage. The levitation box that carried Rosemary inside of it. By just loosening a few bolts. That was the end of poor Rosemary. No one ever suspected you, of course. No one knew of Rosemary's discontent or demands. No one but you and her. She shared those things with you and you only, so there would be no motive found. It was ruled an accidental death.
Assuming any of what you have said is true, how could you even know such a thing?
I just do.
Who would you tell? Who would believe you?
Like I said, all of your secrets are safe with me.
Who are you? Your name is not Lucinda.
No, it isn't.
What is it then?
I've called it out to you in your dream every night since Rosemary's death. You just haven't heard it clearly.
What is your name, curse you? I must know!
Conscience. My name is Conscience.
Conscience?
It's not for me to reveal your secrets, your sins. That must come from you. Shall we practice yet another illusion, Maestro?
No, no!
So many illusions, so many secrets. I'll say nothing, but I'll always be here beside you until you are ready to atone.
Please, please, don't look at me like that.
I am content to be your assistant, but not your accomplice.
I am going mad. Yes, yes, I'm sorry for what I have done. An awful sin. Just please, don't look at me like that. I must pay. I must atone. Rosemary, Rosemary, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. Your blood is on my hands. Your blood. Poor Rosemary. I can't live with myself. I can't.
Maestro, what's all this?
Maestro is a coward, a liar, a thief, a murderer.
What's wrong with the old boy?
I don't know. You must calm down, Maestro. Easy now.
Let me go. I'm ready to talk. Confess what I have done. Confess.
Cinder, what else happened here? What's happened to Maestro?
I am very pleased with him. He has finally listened to me. And now, gentlemen, I must bid you good evening.
That Lucinda had something up her sleeve. And you can bet Maestro won't be attempting his escape act from his new home at the state penitentiary anytime soon.
His conscience wouldn't allow it.
Oh, go away.
That is all we leave. What tale shall we reveal to our listeners next week, my sinister sisters?
What if ye could summon the dead back from their graves?
What if?
Would ye? Listen to our next terrifying tale, The Reckoning Bell.
Join me and my sisters next time as we take the trouble to bubble up the cauldron with another tale to chill your bones here at
the Cavern of the Three Crows.
The Cavern of the Three Crones is written and produced by Lawrence P. Woodsburg. In tonight's cast, you heard Kitty Culpine, Arthur Raymond, Buddy Diller, Phyllis Larson, Dolores Clay, and Paul Diamond. This is Ted Fortescue speaking.
And that, friends, concludes tonight's airing of The Cavern of the Three Crones, one of the very best entries in the series. And now we pause for this station identification break. Hey, Georgette, why don't you do me a favor and wake up Frank?
Well, he still thinks he can drink me under the table. He's 0-5.
Georgette, this isn't fair.
It's a little too late. I mean, early in the morning, to start getting into what is and isn't fair.
You're being incredibly cruel.
Am I?
Why do you want to hurt me so?
Because I'm not done hurting myself. You did a number on me, sweetheart. At least the gin can make me forget about that for a little while.
This has to stop.
I'll stop when I'm finished.
And when will that be?
When one of us checks out.
What do you mean by that?
We'll see who's the last one standing, baby.
Does Frank even know about us?
No. Do you want him to know?
I'd rather he didn't. It's bad enough I know about you two.
Sweetheart, you ought to consider picking up the bottle again. It's the gateway to some blissful ignorance.
You're rotten to the core.
You're the one who plucked this apple.
Get out of here. I'd better not see you here tomorrow night.
Is that some kind of threat?
Okay, folks, Rex Arnold, your friend here on the overnight airwaves, signing off until we meet again tomorrow. Stay tuned for your AM P's and Q's, our daily call-in program for helpful household hints by the high-spirited homemaker herself, Georgette Beverly. I leave you now with some lovely music. Who doesn't love this song from the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical sensation, Oklahoma?
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as statues. All the cattle are standing like statues. They don't turn their heads as they see me ride by, but a little brown maverick is winking her eye. Oh, what a beautiful of the earth are like music. The breeze is so busy, it don't miss a tree. The old weeping willow, she's laughing at me.
Rex Arnold here, keeping you company on this rainy evening. Hope you're safe at home and off the roads tonight. Very slick driving out there with all these thunderstorms. Stay tuned if you dare. Coming up, we've got another rebroadcast of the classic spooky series, Cavern of the Three Crones. A perfect accompaniment to tonight's weather will begin shortly. At the sound of the tone, the time will be 11:30 p.m. We'll be right back with more music after these words.
Hey, Rex.
What is it, Frank?
It's already 11:30. Where is she?
Georgette? I'm sure she'll stumble in here at some point.
She was supposed to meet me at Phil's diner before my shift. She never showed. That's not like her.
I hate to tell you this, but that is like her. You just don't know her well enough.
I'm not buying it. Where the hell is she?
Maybe she's found another pharmacist.
I'm gonna pretend I didn't hear what you just said there, buddy.
When did you see her last?
This morning, about a half hour before she went on air.
Really? A half hour before she went on?
That's what I said. Get the curd out of your ears. Where the hell is she, dammit?
I'm sure she'll turn up somewhere, I'm sure.
What do you mean by that?
No double meaning there, chum. Just what I said.
I don't know why, but I just got this awful feeling. Something bad's happened to her.
Where do you get this awful feeling from?
I don't know. She rubs a lot of people the wrong way, I suppose.
You two seem to get on great.
She's swell company, sure. But you always seem to have a problem with that, don't you?
It's none of my business, Frank.
Finally, something we can agree on.
Great. We're going back on now, right?
We're back on in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Rex Arnold here at the top of the hour. And you know what time it is, right, folks? Time for another visit down below to the Cavern of the Three Crones. Turn on the lights. Turn the lights down low. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this classic thrill fest from one of the golden annals of yesteryear. And now, our rebroadcast of The Cavern of the Three Crones.
It's time once again to enter the bizarre world of the Cavern of the Three Crones, three satanic storytelling sisters, along with their feline minion Obsidian, invite you into a realm of mystery, murder, and the supernatural.
What story shall we tell?
It appears before us now, in the poison broth of the cauldron.
Stir it well!
Oh, it emerges now. Can you make out the title, my sisters? Mine eyes are not as sharp
sharp as yours.
Ah, yes. It be a tale called The Reckoning Bell.
Wait! Do you think this one might be a tad too horrible to tell?
If ye be weak of heart, turn, turn away now.
Turn away!
Turn away!
They still be here, eh? Well, we warned ye. We warned ye.
Ma, Pa, it's Mr. Spence coming up the path.
What? I declare, he looks something weary from toiling all day out there.
Well, open the door, by gum. Ma, make that man a mint julep. I reckon he must be parched from working out there under that boiling sun.
Oh, yes, Pa.
Here he is. Hello, Mr. Spence.
Well, how do you do, Colonel Brett, Mrs. Brett, Julia? I think me and my men are finished, ready to show you. Where's Todd?
Todd, sugar. Mr. Spence is here.
I know.
Well, he's been toiling all day to finish it, just the way she wanted.
I know.
I know it's unusual, but it is what she wanted.
I know.
You in particular, being her fiancé and all, don't you want to see it?
No, I never want to see it. I wish you never went through with it.
But it's what she wanted. She always talked about it from the time we was youngins.
I said I don't want to see it.
I admit it is rather queer for a final request, but nothing was too good for our Georgette. I'm sorry, Mr. Spence. Todd has been positively wrathful in his grieving over our poor departed Georgie girl.
I'll never get over it. Never, I say.
Oh, well, now, why don't we all settle down in the parlor and let the men folk enjoy their juleps while Julia and I sip on a lemonade? I'm sure after a cool refreshment, we can all take a stroll on down and have a gander at Mr. Spence's handiwork. Here, Todd, have a...
Blast you!
Oh, Todd!
I said I don't want none of this. None of your mint juleps or your antiquated and morbid ways of grieving. Not this rotten old mansion full of memories. Not...
Oh, there, Todd. It's all right. It's all right. You must remember, we are all hurting too. Georgette was the sun in the sky for us all. We all bathed in her light.
But now there's only darkness.
Todd, my boy, perhaps it's not my place to say so, but you need to cast aside your furor out of respect for this wonderful and most venerated clan that still wishes to keep you as part of its own. Come alone with me first, and I will show you the crypt. Its elegant Bordeaux granite exterior, its gold-trimmed marble entrance, the exquisite garden I planted with draping wisteria, bright begonias, and sweet-smelling magnolias, just like the one we placed in her hair at the moment of her final repose. Come, come with me, boy. You must see it. It's only a small step, but it's an important one.
And the bell? Where did you put that accursed bell?
Right where she asked me to place it, son. Over the door of the crypt.
It's just a bell, Todd. Nothing more.
A bell with a string attached to it. The other end of the string. The other end.
We placed it in her hand.
Just as she asked us, Todd.
Damn it! We've lost power. Frank! Frank! Frank, where are you? We've lost power, Frank!
I know, I could see that.
Doesn't the station have a backup generator?
No, they didn't want to spend the money to get one.
Ah, for Christ's sake!
I'm sure the power will come back on soon.
And what if it doesn't?
Would anyone care? Who the hell is listening anyway? It's kind of funny, though, huh?
What's funny, Frank?
The girl in that story. The name of the dead girl.
I thought you didn't pay attention to these old shows. That they're all crap.
You didn't notice? That the girl's name was Georgette?
She's still on your mind, is she?
It's been hours since I've seen her, Rex.
Well, maybe you should call the police.
No! I can't do that. What if my wife? I can't.
Then you'll have to sit this one out, Frank.
God, where is she?
You know, Frank, I'm starting to wonder why you keep asking that question.
What the hell are you talking about, Rex?
Especially when I think you already know the answer.
Good Lord!
The bell!
It can't be!
Georgette! My Georgette!
You told me something earlier, Frank. Something that has been stuck in my craw since I heard you say it. You said the last time you saw Georgette was half an hour before she went on the air.
I did!
Have mercy! This defies the laws of God himself!
That's not possible, Frank. You were still blacked out from drinking all night. I saw you. I saw both of you. Only one of you was wide awake. She drank you under the table, chum. 0 for 5. She told me. I was with Georgette right until she went on the air, not you.
No! No, I misspoke, that's all.
Please, somebody make it stop.
Why don't you start telling me the truth, Frank?
Please, somebody stop that ringing.
You're screwy, Rex. All screwy.
Is she still alive, Frank? What did you do with her?
With who?
Georgette!
You might as well start talking now, Frank. You're going to do a lot more talking from this night forward.
The bell! Please! Please make it stop ringing!
So you want it straight, huh?
You can still give it to me straight without that knife in your hand, son.
She was gonna talk! Tell my wife! The station manager! If I didn't score more of those bills for her!
Todd, you mustn't go out there! What if...
She's been buried for weeks now! Her body must be...
Todd, don't!
So you killed her?
I didn't mean to! I tried to get her back off, but she wasn't having it! She's a miserable addict! No matter how many times I tried to explain it, I couldn't get those pills anymore! Nobody can! I called her at the station using a funny voice to try to put the scare into her, but she figured it out it was me. She confronted me, we quarreled, and...
Out came the knife.
Georgette, I'm coming to you, Todd. No, don't you dare open that crypt door.
Out came the knife.
I'm coming to you. I'm coming to you. I'm coming to you.
Look, a withered hand's coming out of the crypt.
Put that knife away, Frank. You're already in deep enough.
I'm not going to jail, Rex.
Frank! Frank, don't!
So long, Rex.
My God. Frank, you poor wretch. Why'd you have to take the coward's way out?
What a tale! What a tale! Of course, you're familiar with that wench from beyond the grave.
You mean Georgette?
Sorry, doesn't ring a bell.
What's that obsidian, my furry fiend? There's no more sand in the hourglass. Time for us to go, eh?
But before we leave, what tale shall we reveal to our listeners next week, my sinister sisters?
A dastardly scoundrel on the run decides to end it all in next week's terrible tale, The Coward's Way Out.
Join me and my sisters next time as we take the trouble to bubble up the cauldron with another tale to chill your bones here at the Cavern of the Three Crows.
The Cavern of the Three Crones is written and produced by Lawrence P. Woodsburg. In tonight's cast, you heard Kitty Kalpine, Arthur Raymond, Buddy Diller, Phyllis Larson, Dolores Clay, and Paul Diamond. This is Ted Fortescue speaking.
We present to you a bit of verse by our very own resident poet, Dr. David Linton.
Radio friend, driving through the dark of night by myself, it don't feel right. The headlights cut a path for me, though I'm alone, I don't feel free. It's lonely on the interstate, I hit the gas, I can't be late. I'm driving in an empty car. By morning light, I must go far. I need some talk to stay awake. I don't have time to take a break. But only one arm's length away, there's one to help me make my way. I turn the knob and scan the dial to ease me through another mile. And there he is, right there beside me. Just like a god, he wants to guide me. He tells me how and where to stop, and gives reports on season's crops, or where to buy the latest style, and where to stop and rest a while. If I can wait, then pretty soon he just might play my favorite tune, the very best of rock and roll mixed in with lots of Motown soul. He'll hit the oldies from the past, the songs that make the time go fast, a touch of Bowie and Elvis too, the hits that thrilled me through and through, then Otis, Aretha, and old Chuck Berry. They always made this boy feel merry. He'd take a break to play a jingle. His deep bass voice would make me tingle. My DJ friend became a brother. While on the road, I'd want no other. I knew him well, but not at all. We'd pass as strangers in the hall. Before too long, he'd become my friend. But the signal's reach meant it had to end. As I entered a valley or ascended a hill, his voice took on static or faded until he left me abandoned. He took his songs too. But once again, I knew what to do. I hit a button and let it scan in search of another all-night man. And sure enough, with no hesitation, I pulled in yet another station. Another friend so I wouldn't feel lonely, who'd treat me like his one and only. Until at last I'm off the highway and pull into my private driveway. But just before I turn the key, I thank him for accompanying me. I know he'll wait there as my friend until I have to drive again.